What is happening, people of the interwebs? It is time for another episode of the Do Things Podcast. But before we get to the show, a quick word from our sponsors. And if you happen to be thinking to yourself, well, now I don't know where to get started. I understand Anchor.fm is great, but how do I make a podcast? I have got you covered. We have a brand new course called Do Podcast that take you from start to finish, everything you need to know about making and distributing your podcast. There is a free course where you can learn everything you need to know to use just your phone to create your very own podcast. Go to dothingsonline.com and start today. We can't wait for you to do that podcast.
Who's ready to do things?
What is happening, people of the interwebs? The Do Things Podcast.
The Do Things Podcast of the Do Things Podcast.
And I am jacked out of my mind right now. I just want to help people, man. Burn your plans and do things. Selfies and butterflies.
You are a miracle.
Stop worrying about the things you can't control.
Burn your plans and do things.
Let's go. That's it. What is happening, people of the interwebs? Welcome back to another episode of the Do Things Podcast. I'm Todd Fraser, your host, as always. And today, my guest is Ken Carey. Ken and I actually met on a commercial shoot that I was a part of just recently over in the past month. And it was really, really interesting getting to know him a little bit. And we just kind of clicked and we've been talking back and forth. And I brought him on to tell his story. He actually is the co-founder of Script to Screen. They're an advertising agency that specializes in commercials and full digital. Like they do, their packages are big time. They've worked with some of the biggest brands. And in this interview, we talk through Ken's story and kind of how he came out of in a similar place as I do, as far as went to college on a football scholarship. And then after, at a certain point, you realize, you know what? Football's not my future. And he gets into some things. And all the way through starting and failing a ginormous launch of a project, and then all of a sudden hooked on phonics, and then the story goes on from there. So I'm going to get out of the way and let him tell his story, but thanks so much for being here. This is Ken Carey on the Do Things Podcast. Well, Ken, this is so awesome. I'm excited to have you on the show. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Todd. I've been looking forward to this. We met, oh gosh, probably about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And you know how you just meet someone and you go, I vibe with this dude.
Yeah, so absolutely. I feel the same way. Yeah. And that was, it's fun because that's my first experience on a like legit commercial shoot. I do video and I do small time stuff. But that was really fun just seeing your process. Is that your passion? Do you love that?
You know, I really do. You know what I really love, Todd? I love taking, breaking down. So to kind of give context to your audience is that, I'm a direct-to-consumer marketer and have an advertising agency. And what we do is we create commercials on television, digital, social, to sell a product or a service, and then for the company to own that business. In other words, if I have a product or a service that I'm selling at a retailer or I'm selling on Amazon, the problem we have or problem these companies have is Amazon and the retailer own that data. So what we try to do is create a campaign so the company owns the data, because at the end of the day, you want leverage, especially now when 90% of the distribution is shut down, but 100% of the demand is still there. And what do you do? Are you going to be vulnerable? So that's what we do. And so back to your original question is, yeah, my passion is trying to figure out how I'm going to communicate something to a consumer that knows nothing about a product or service, and how am I going to educate them? How am I going to motivate them enough to take an action? Mm-hmm. And that's what I love. It's kind of psychology, it's education, but it's really, really, really interesting. And we just happen to do it on television and digital. So yeah, that's my passion.
Yeah. Well, it was such a great experience to be able to see that side of it. Cause being on the other side, typically where I'm doing what you were doing in that scenario. Right. So getting to see somebody else do it, that's had so much experience. And I really want to talk about kind of how you got into that, because coming out of a TV world, right. And then jumping into this. It was really encouraging for me to see how all this works on that end. I was blessed to be a part of it. And I think if you're listening to this or you're watching this, there's a link below to the full Sunjo setup so you can check it all out. It's actually, and the crazy part is it's a great product. Like, this is
it's a great product.
We didn't come on here to sell the product, but like my wife just used it again the other day. She's like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So
it's easy to sell a great product.
That's true.
You know, it's right.
You know, I think that's probably something we should touch on at some point, and maybe now is the time to do that. But picking the right product, picking the right partner when you're in the marketing space, you have to struggle with, do I pick somebody that's willing to pay me even though I know it's a loser? Or do I wait and find that really, really valuable product? How do you filter through that?
Well, that's a good question. And we are fortunate enough that we have that opportunity and we don't have to take every project. We want to get involved with projects that we know are, we have a really good chance for success, that are really going to solve people's problems, and we can really help a company scale. We're all about helping a company scale their business. And Todd, that goes back to originally how we got into this business. I'm a telecommunications and journalism major in college, and my wife was as well. And so my passion was, I played college football. And when you're playing college football and you're a tight end and you drop a few footballs, they turn you into a linebacker.
That's funny, because I played college football as well, and I was a linebacker. They didn't even get a chance to throw me the ball. Like, that was, they just moved me automatically.
If they did, it was a mistake, right? Yeah. So, you know, I realized that I was not going to go very far with that after college, but I had a great experience. So
where'd you play?
But what I played at San Diego State.
Awesome.
How about yourself?
Southeast Missouri State. We were 1AA, but I did get to play against Tony Romo. So, you know, got to watch that cat in action. You saw some epic players, I'm guessing, in your day.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Playing University of Miami, UCLA, big teams, you know, Stanford, stuff like that. Those were the big boys. So that was a whole different ball act. But I do remember playing at University of Miami and taking them down to the last minute. But I tell you what, when you're playing in Miami and you're not used to that weather, it's beyond anything I've ever experienced. And I'm talking about the humidity, the heat. And if you're not used to that, it just takes so much out of you as a football player. And you understand that, because once you get broken down physically, mentally, it is next. So,
oh yeah,
that's kind of, but anyway,
that whole idea of just changing weather and even altitude, like you talk about that just, oh man, I think we could have a whole show talking about probably football and sports. Yeah. I think for me, that's something that set me up to be able to say, look, I'm going to actually take this action. I'm going to, in defiance of all these people that are against me, right? Like the other team. Right. And I'm going to go and I'm going to take that on. So, so you played college football at San Diego State, and then you started moving into TV.
Yeah. Yeah. So because I was a football player, I understood the idiosyncrasies of offenses and defenses. Mm-hmm. And so when I was kind of retired from my college career, I would direct live college events. And this was just before ESPN. So there was, you know, when you're doing a college football game, it was more local and regional. So, but I directed hundreds of college football games. And I did that because I could anticipate what was happening. I knew from a director's perspective what this player was going to do, what that was going to do. So I had a good eye for it, if you will. And then, what I wanted to do from that point, Todd, was I wanted to direct the big time. I wanted to go to the NFL. I wanted to direct the big, big games. So I became a production assistant at CBS and ABC Sports. And basically, for your listeners and viewers, a production assistant means you're a glorified coffee runner, right? But you get yourself in the ecosystem of those people you want to be around. And that goes back to, you know, what I really loved about your message about, you know, you got to take action. You just got to move forward. And that's what I did. I just said, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. I don't know where it's going to take me. Yeah. You know, there's no net to fall. I'm just going to go. So I did that, and I was able to learn and get very closely knit with the big executive producers and producers. And so I was around that, and then, you know, an opportunity fell on my lap one day where we were going to do a Monday Night Football game, and we were doing a game with the 49ers, and the executive producer said, you know what, our producer has another thing they got to do here. We need to get a story done with Steve Young, who was the quarterback at the 49ers at the time.
Yeah.
And they said, can you do it? And I'm like, yeah. So I went there and interviewed him, and it aired, and it was great. So I got that bug, but here's the problem was this, is that, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, experience these things, that at that early time in sports television, it wasn't like every league now and every team and whatever has these television stations and television contracts. There was four networks.
Yeah.
That was it. So if you were going to direct Monday Night Football, you were one person out of already 30 people who are doing it, who already have 30 years of tenure ahead of you.
Mm.
So it became very crystal clear that a couple things had to happen. One was I had to be born into one of those families, which that didn't happen. And secondly, you know, somebody was going to have to die. I mean,
yeah.
Morbid as that sounds, someone's going to have to continue on, and then I'd get that opportunity. So I thought, you know what, I'm too impatient. So anyway, so that kind of got to that point. And then I met my wife, and she was the producer, and she was the on-air talent at ABC in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And she would do a lot of the Rams and the Raiders and the Angels and the Dodgers and all those kind of football games and baseball games. And anything sports-wise she'd do on TV. So we met at a television station, and, you know, obviously we became we were dating. And so we were literally, I would get home really late from the television station, and we'd see these things on television called infomercials.
Mm-hmm.
And we really didn't understand what it was, but it was really compelling because it was about, it was writing, it was psychology, it was really trying to take, you know, interesting things that we've learned in our careers and adapt it to selling a product or service.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, she had kind of been done doing her television stuff. And believe it or not, after 3 or 4 years of Super Bowls and Wide World of Sports and Olympics and World Series, you know what? It's just another game. It's just another game. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So we were kind of over it. But anyway, we saw these shows, and we said, well, we kind of want to do our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, we could do that. We could create a product. We could find a product and sell it on television. We write, we produce, we could do that. You know, who are we to think we couldn't do that? Well, here's where the rub in the road comes. So we decided that we were going to develop our own product and service. And our product was actually a positive motivation tape program a little bit before Tony Robbins.
Okay.
And we were involved in that because my father-in-law was just an amazing person. His positive attitude, his success in business rubbed on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that, you know, if you tell yourself bad things are going to happen. If
yep.
you believe and you tell yourself good things, something's good is going to happen. So let's just package that.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. And so then we created an infomercial because we know how to produce television.
Right.
And it failed miserably.
Oh, really?
I mean, like, oh, miserably. Like, to the point of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And
whoa.
today, that'd be millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And, right? So, but, you know, we felt we were on the right track, and we knew that we weren't just going to give up. First of all, when your in-laws and your good friends fund something, it gets very awkward at holiday dinners when
yeah.
you owe people money.
Right.
So you figured it out. So long story short is we kept hammering at it, hammering at it, and we just figured it out finally to the point where we didn't know any better. But at the end of a show, usually on television, you put the credits, right?
Yeah.
You know, directed by this, produced by this, blah, blah, blah. Well, in infomercials, you don't do that because that's valuable advertising time. But we didn't know the difference. Oh. So, you know, ignorance is bliss, right? So we put our name up there, and then one day we get a phone call. Literally, I can remember it. And somebody says, you know, we don't want to hire you. I mean, we don't want to sell you our product. We want to hire you to sell our product. And I said, and we weren't really a business at that time. And I said, well, hang on, let me talk to marketing. So I put my hand over the receiver and said, marketing, which was my wife.
Right.
And I said, somebody wants to pay us to do this. And I'm like, okay, we're a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt. I think that's probably a good move. So that's kind of how it started, Todd. And it was a very, very successful program. It was a smoking cessation program.
Okay.
And it sold a lot of product, did very well. And it kind of started our reputation in the business. So we were kind of altruistic at the time. We said, you know, if we're going to do this, we're going to put this time and effort into it. We are going to make a difference in the world. Mm. We want people to really benefit from the products and services that we sell. So we literally hit the streets. I mean, not figuratively, literally hit the streets.
Yeah.
And came across a company called, and you'll probably remember, and your audience will remember, they're called Hooked on Phonics.
Oh, heck yeah.
So they were happening at the time, they were looking to do an infomercial, and we were literally pounding the pavement. So, yeah. You know, you make your own opportunities.
Absolutely.
Right. You make those opportunities. So that worked out extremely successful. I mean, sold hundreds of millions of dollars of reading programs, and it really put us on the map. And that's how we built our business, through, you know, figuring it out, learning, getting whacked upside the head, you know, hitting the streets, bootstrapping it, mm-hmm. but never, ever, ever giving up. And then here we are over 30 years later, and we've generated over $7 billion in sales for our clients.
Wow.
We work with biggest brands in the world, and we're very, very fortunate and very blessed. But a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. So what was the time?
The harder you work, the luckier you get. You know that. You realize
that's
that, right?
That's right. Because it's all luck, right? That's. So what was the time frame between when you tried to launch that initial product and when you got the call from Hooked on Phonics? Like, was that like 3 years? Was that 10 years?
3 years.
3 years. Okay. Wow, that was a good guess by me.
So, yeah, it was a great guess. But that was 3 years of struggling and literally putting our hands in the couch looking for change.
Yeah.
For a coffee. And I'm not playing, I'm not crying poor. We did well in our professional careers at the networks, but sure. You know, after a while it runs out.
Yeah.
It runs out. So we had that critical pivot point. Like, are we going to continue this? Are we going to go back to the networks and do something we like, but is it really what we want to do?
Yeah.
And, it just worked out. But it worked out because talent, persistence, tenacity, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Well, you actually just said a word there that I think is extremely critical that I don't think is talked about enough. And there has mm-hmm. to be some level of talent for yeah. anybody to be able to succeed. So you can't just say, like, if I said I wanted to be a professional cellist, yet
right.
my only musical ability is rhythm. Like, I'm not,
right.
that's unrealistic.
Right.
Right.
That's called delusional.
Yes. Absolutely, that's called delusional.
But you're right. But it doesn't mean you can't learn a skill.
Correct.
But you have to commit to what it is you're going to learn and then build on it, because you have to have the talent, but talent can be learned. Now, mm-hmm. you know, Michael Jordan just happened to be an amazingly talented athlete, but he worked really hard at that.
Oh, yeah.
And people never see the other side of the hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work that he put in.
Yeah.
And so you could have a knack for something, you could have a talent, but you have to burnish that. You have to rub on it. You have to really work hard at it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, if you have
it
talent,
doesn't fall out of the sky.
Right. If you have talent, but you don't develop it, then you never reach your potential. I think that's the bigger problem. It's like, I've got a little bit of talent, so it should just come to me. I think that's what a lot of this, everybody expects that, you know, I deserve it because I have a little bit of talent. However, guys like you and I that have experienced some stuff, you experienced a lot more than I have on probably both ends. But that's something that I think is really important to say. If you have a little bit of talent, that's awesome. But then you need to actually, you need to develop it. So
Absolutely. I mean, talent, When you work on talent, that becomes expertise.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
That's the difference. Talent is one thing, but when you work hard on it, you become an expert or expertise. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really important. A very important differentiator, because I think people hear a word and they take it for granted that I could be it or I can just do it, and not really understand the underlying work that's involved to do it to the level that they want to do it.
Exactly. I think that's a huge thing that we need to focus on. There is some talent, but you have to develop it. And you know, Absolutely. You don't see behind the scenes stuff. Something else that you mentioned early, like when you got the Steve Young interview, I think that's fascinating. And I would love to see that interview if it's somewhere. Like that'd be phenomenal.
I need to look for that someday.
That'd be great content. Just to get out there, like, hey, here's my interview with Steve. Like, that would be great. But the way you got that, it sounds to me, I wasn't there, this is my assumption, is that it was very heavily based on your relationship with the executive producers and the executives, right? Can you speak a little bit to the fact that, I mean, I know some of your connections, like we talked about your connection with Gary Vee. We talked about Shalene Johnson and your connection with Beachbody and all that stuff. Yep. I saw an interview with you, interviewed Sheryl Crow. There's a lot of this stuff that I see that, based on my experience, it comes out a lot of, like, you came to do this commercial shoot that I was a part of, and I talked to you and we kind of started a little bit of a relationship, and it starts, I don't know where this is going to go. I'm glad we're connected. Right. But can you speak to a little bit about that, the value of having the ability to say, look, I'm going to create relationship as opposed to transactions?
Absolutely. That's a great point, Todd. And the relationship with the producer and executive producer at ABC Sports were relationships. Yes, I knew them and I talked to them, but you also have to prove your value. You can't just say, hey, they know me and therefore they should trust me.
Right.
Nobody at that level of network television is just going to say, hey, I like this guy, give him a shot. No, you better prove something, and you have to show some kind of expertise. So let's just clarify, relationships are important, but you have to show your value. And therefore, that relationship is just going to help that ability much more. But, I mean, how many times have we heard or been, you know, kind of frustrated by, oh, well, that's just the owner's son, and that guy didn't know anything. Well, that does happen. And eventually, it doesn't last long.
Yeah.
So you have to have the ability. So relationships are really, really, really important. And they are, you know, it's the ability to, I think, you know what I think the biggest thing about relationships is, Todd, in business and in life, is the ability to add value to somebody else.
Yeah.
How can you add value to them so your relationship becomes top of mind, right? Because if I'm just emailing you or I'm just hitting you up all the time, that's not a relationship. That's called a stalker.
Right? Yes. You can get arrested for that. Yeah.
right. But what can you bring to the table of, like, how can I help? What can I do? Yeah. What can I learn? How could I add value to you? And the minute you start adding value to somebody else, your relationship becomes that much more serious and that much more entrenched. And then there becomes a moment of trust that they say, you know what? I can trust this person to do that because they've shown me that they can do it.
You mean it's based on merit? That's weird. No, that's that can't be how it works,
just,
right?
That's just wacky. Yeah.
Oh, that's and I think there's so much. It's pervasive in society, especially with all the stuff we see going on. That it's about me, and because I'm me, whatever, you know. I DM'd you, so you should follow me. Therefore, it's all this. I mean, just in this social media world, right? It's statistics, right, and right. It's this outside perspective that doesn't have anything to do with what you've actually done. Like a lot of this right. this influencer marketing stuff, with I'm sure you've probably experienced a little bit of on the digital yep. side, is these yep. people that just have created this persona really out of nowhere. That we forget about the value and the longevity of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, good for them. Good for them that they've done that. But at the end of the day, if you don't add value, if somebody's not getting something from what you're doing, you're going to disappear. Mm. You're just going to disappear. Now, there are some unicorns, but, you know, that's why they're called unicorns. There's not many of them.
There's not many of them. That's right. So we're getting close to, I want to wrap up here, because I think I'd like to do another episode with you sometime in the future if that works out.
Okay.
I was watching an interview actually just a couple months ago where you were talking to somebody where they were asking the question, right now in a pandemic when businesses have to be shut down, what is it that you need to do? And you said something that was very interesting. And I just kind of want you to expand on that a little bit. You said ask your customers.
Right.
Because I think that we forget that, you know what, our customers have needs, that we're bringing value, we're solving a problem on some level. So
right.
when you come into a situation like this one, like we're in, where you have trouble like getting business going, and we start right. thinking internally, what can we do? Yet
right.
it's really about what the customer needs, right?
Right, right. So before I elaborate on that question a little bit, this is, when we talk about this is something that bring a lot of value to your audience, because they have businesses and things mm-hmm. like that. Is that correct, Todd?
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm glad you asked that question, because I deal with this all the time. And a lot of the content that I put out to attract businesses to us is that, you know, if I sit there and think that I know all the answers, I'm really the fool, right?
Yeah.
So in a time like this, where we're looking for things to restart our business, to jumpstart our business, to do whatever, the bottom line comes down to, it doesn't matter what you think. It matters what your customer needs. If you just ask them, what do you need? What could I provide? They're going to tell you not only a great answer, they're going to tell you something you can sell.
Yeah.
If they've already told you they want it, the chances of them wanting to buy it are pretty darn good. But you've better built up some goodwill up to that point. Mm-hmm. You better have added some value, which goes back to the original part of our conversation. And then when you say, oh, I get it, you need actually a product that does this, and that would make your life easier right now, right? And they go, yeah. And then you do a little poll, or you do some kind of survey, and you're like, you know, I just polled 1,000 customers, and 800 of them said this is the greatest idea ever. Duh.
Yeah.
Go make that product.
Right.
Versus, because that's what we do, Todd, in our business, is that companies come to us and say, we have this product, we want to sell it. And I say, great. For a lot of reasons, it works, because they have a lot of brand equity and all that kind of stuff. But there's always that follow-up product. That follow-up product has a lot of challenges. One, how much money and time are you going to spend developing what you think your customer wants?
Oh, yeah.
Millions, tens of millions of dollars. Now, they do focus groups and stuff like that, but it's a little bit different versus, what do you need? What can I help you with? Like, for example, right now, one of the things that we know our clients need are things that one of our clients has a disinfectant business, and
oh, wow.
they do it for CPAPs, and they decided, well, what else do our clients need? And they go, they need disinfectant for any high touch product.
Yeah.
Because it's top of mind, right?
Right. Oh, big
your
time.
Car keys, your car keys, your garage door opener, your phone, your this, your that. So they went out and said, what can we provide for you? And that's what they said. And guess what? They're going to go make that product. They're going to save tens of millions of dollars just trying to figure it out because they know exactly what they're going to do. And then they're going to launch this product in 2 months versus the typical life cycle of creating a product is over a year, millions of dollars, and opportunity costs. People forget about opportunity costs.
Yeah.
You're spending your time doing something over here and you're missing out on an opportunity and that's costing you money. So I kind of went off the freeway a little bit there, Todd, but yes, ask your customers. And you know what, Todd, it doesn't matter if you have a pizza joint, if you have a yoga studio, or you have a $100 million brand.
Mm-hmm.
Every customer has a need.
Yes.
And if that need can be met, you can take advantage in a good way to serve them. And if you serve their needs, they're glad to pay you for it.
Absolutely. Well, and I think we get a little bit behind the scenes. We start to feel like, well, we have to know what they're needing before they ask it, right? Because that's talked about a lot. However, that seems silly because it's like, hey, like your example of the disinfectant company, especially right now, that is totally top of mind. And the opportunity is, I mean, we've got a while before this whole COVID thing is really over. So it's not like that's something that is going to go away. And we touch these things all the time. Like until COVID, I don't think I ever cleaned my phone, which is disgusting.
You don't even want to know it's on that thing.
No, it's so gross. So like when this product's ready, like I need that product. Like that's right. I think that, and that kind of comes back to surveying your actual customer base and saying, what is it that you need? What's the problem that you're having right now that I may not know about because either I don't have it or my perspective is different.
And it's totally different. It's the companies or you in your own business, you're so into the weeds.
Oh yeah.
You don't really see outside of that, you know, and companies, we have these strategy sessions all the time. They're like, okay, so what should we do? What should we come up with next? And kind of a smart aleck, I said, well, and I have, you know, those eight balls.
Oh yeah, magic eight ball.
That you magic eight ball and you flip it over and I go, well, hey, hang on, let me get my magic eight ball. And I say, it says, don't talk to your mother or whatever.
Right.
I'm like, they're like, well, that's not very helpful. And I go, well, your question isn't very helpful because I can't tell you that.
Yeah.
But I can tell you if we put this strategy together by asking your customers and think very carefully. Don't lead the witness, right?
Right, absolutely.
Another very, very important. Don't lead the witness. Don't try to validate what's in your mind,
mm-hmm.
which is very tempting.
Right.
Play dumb. I want to help you. And I'm telling you, you will be blown away by what you learn. You're like, I had no idea a customer wanted that. I can do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's really quite amazing. And you know what? It happens with the yoga studio down the street to the biggest brands in the world. It is not any different. And that's where people got to just step away and realize it. It's not any different. At the end of the day, people are people.
That's a great point.
You know, I don't care if you have, you know, $100 million business or you have $100,000 business. People are people. It doesn't matter. It's just the only difference is scale.
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So man, people are people. I think we need to just remind ourselves that kind of needs to be a mantra. Like take action and people are people. Like that's not changing. The how you serve them may change. The vehicle might change. However, at the end of the day, if you need to solve a problem, you need to get them what they need. People are people. I love that, Ken.
People are people. They have their needs and they need them met. And if they knew how to do it themselves, they'd be in business for themselves, but they're not.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of the people that come up with the idea, a lot of times it's that fear of, what if it fails? Right. And that's the big, you fail. That happens.
It's real.
Right.
You fail. And you know what? And I'm sure I know you subscribe to this without even asking you the question, but you know, failure is just another opportunity to succeed at challenging the problem in a different way.
Yep.
It's just another way to say, okay, that didn't work. Let's go around it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, this is crazy, but if you look at an ant,
mm-hmm.
if an ant is trying to go over a big branch, that ant will hit that branch and hit that branch and hit, and then finally decide, I'm going to go around the branch.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got this big thing they're carrying in their mouth or whatever, their claw.
Yeah.
But if an ant can figure it out, we should be able to figure it out.
You would think. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Well, Ken, thank you so much for being here. I think, there's a lot to take away from this. And I'm excited. I'm excited for you, and I'm excited for what you've built. And we didn't even mm-hmm. talk about it. So can you tell the audience, what's your wife's name?
Yes, my wife's name is Barbie.
Yes, and your name is Ken.
Yes, and our daughter's name is not Skipper. Yes, it's Barbie. It's Barbie and Ken.
Ken and Barbie. That is, I love that. That's so awesome. Thank you so much for being here. You wrote a book, right?
Yep.
It's available on Amazon. You've got an audio version as well. Is that correct?
I do. It just came out on Audible. It's called This Works Marketing. And This Works Marketing is basically the 30 years of experience, expertise, successes, and failures that we have developed through startups, small companies, medium-sized companies, all the way to the biggest brands in the world, to develop a strategy on how to take someone from a prospect and turn them into a customer.
Mm.
And there's a process of doing it. It's very proven. It's methodical. There's a process for doing it. And that's what the book is. It's 13 chapters on This Works Marketing. And I always call it, the reason, it's funny, people always ask me, why did you call it This Works Marketing? That's kind of a funky name. I'm like, well, you know what? Every time a majority of the time, we have had a successful campaign with a client and they came in really not knowing anything about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's successful, and they say, you know what? This really works. I'm like, yeah. So I borrowed that and said, This Works Marketing. So yeah, it's on Amazon. It's on Audible. And I do a lot of content that, you know, people can follow me on LinkedIn or my Instagram. It's Ken P. Carey on Instagram
mm-hmm.
and Ken Carey on LinkedIn. And I put out a lot of content and basically just trying to lessen the learning cycle for people to help them with their business. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's so much for people to know that they don't know. Because, yeah, you've heard the thing. If you know that you don't know, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
If you don't know that you don't know, you're screwed.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
anyway, I love it.
Thanks for asking about that. Yeah, I appreciate it. And if there's Todd, if there's anything, you know, you help you and what you're doing anytime, any day,
I got some ideas that I actually want to talk to you about. So we'll do that off of the show though, because I don't want to, you know, give away our brilliant ideas to all these people. So, hey, but I really appreciate you being here. Go check out Ken on all the places, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Script to Screen. It's I love it.
Yeah.
Hooked on Phonics worked for me, brother.
You remember that?
Heck yeah,
you
I do. I think we used it. I mean, like, it's Hooked on Phonics worked for me. I love it, Ken. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Todd.
Thanks so much for listening to the Do Things podcast. That is a Fraser Industry Studios production, created, hosted, edited, and all the things by me, Todd Fraser. Make sure to follow us on social media. At T Fraser SoCal is my personal Instagram and Twitter, and find me on Facebook at the Do Things podcast. We got all kinds of stuff all over the place. YouTube, hit that YouTube, phrasetube.com, or you can go to YouTube and type in Todd Fraser Do Things. All the things pop up. You guys, we want to make sure we inspire and equip as many as you as possible to take action. Share this with your friends. Tell your mom. Get out there. Burn your plans. Do those things. And we will see you on the next episode.